Welcome to the Fantasy Financial Podcast. I'm Maddie Wasserman. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm joined here as always by Colin Kapoor. Colin, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Maddie. How are you?
I'm doing great. So this is our first time. We've done two episodes in a week, and we're here today to break down what's going to go ahead here in week 9. But first, we have to get to the breaking news off the top, which happened yesterday after we recorded our Tuesday show, and that's the news out of the Green Bay Packers facility and Aaron Rodgers testing positive for COVID. We now know that he's unvaccinated despite before making claims to the contrary. And now they get Davante Adams back from a COVID absence. Now Rodgers is out. So there's a lot of things in flux with the Green Bay team right now.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to stick to the fantasy implications of this one. We don't have to get into the politics of it all. But regardless of what you may think of Aaron Rodgers, he's not playing this week. He has until Saturday next week to clear the protocol, so he might be out in week 10 as well. So it's going to be the Jordan Love show against Kansas City.
It's going to be the Jordan Love show, as you said. Rodgers, he's made some questionable stuff. We don't have to get into all that. You can make your own conclusions. There's plenty of stuff that's been written and talked about that. But from the fantasy football perspective, Davante Adams comes back this week. First of all, off the top, I don't think there are some teams that you look at around the league, let's say maybe the Cardinals being a good example, where you have players like an A.J. Green, Rondell Moore, those types of players where if Kyler were to miss this week, which we'll get into later, he might, that you'd say, oh, because the quarterback's out, there are players that you would have started that you're not going to start anymore. I don't think that's true for Green Bay in that if you were Hugh of Aaron Jones on your team, you're still starting Aaron Jones. If you have Davante Adams on your team, you're still starting Davante Adams. Yeah, Davante Adams may go from wide receiver 2 to wide receiver 18, but you're still starting him either way. And with the rest of their team, maybe A.J. Dillon, but I don't think from perspective of who you start this week, this news really changes that much.
Yeah, with Davante Adams, you're rolling with him. You know, he's probably not going to – he might get the same target volume, honestly. He had a 16-target, 18-target game with Aaron Rodgers as quarterback. You know, with Robert Tonyan out for the year, maybe Jordan Love leans on Davante Adams. I mean, it would be a smart option for you know, a rookie or – I don't know if he's a rookie right now, but a new quarterback to lean on, one of the best wide receivers in the league. But, I mean, if you have Adams, you're rolling with him. If you have Jones, I think you can start Dillon. I think they're gonna roll Jones and Dillon out in the same kind of way they did against Arizona, in which they both got a fair amount of carries. But with the secondary wide receiver options, maybe an Alan Lazard or Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I would try to pivot away from them just because of the quarterback situation.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, I don't think you restart. I mean, Lazard could have been a fringe start. Lazard was the guy that we came on here last week, and when Davante Adams was in the league, we said pound Lazard, and then Lazard had his own COVID thing, but he's going to be back this week for them, so that's good. A.J. Dillon's the one guy that's kind of a fringe start. I think if you're in a deeper league, A.J. Dillon's a guy that I would kind of look towards just because he's actually put together some pretty impressive weeks here lately. So he's the one guy where you think, you mentioned, right, Aaron Jones has been playing more out. He gets a huge amount of targets. A.J. Dillon had 16 carries against Arizona, and Aaron Jones was playing. This wasn't a thing where Aaron Jones was out. With Aaron Jones in the lineup, A.J. Dillon had 16 carries for 78 yards last week to the clip of 7.8 fantasy points. Is this a guy with that workload last week? Now they're going to need to run the ball more with a guy who's never started a serious NFL game before. And is A.J. Dillon a guy that you can now look to for some depth to actually start this week?
Yeah, I mean, if you have to, A.J. Dillon is not the worst person you can be starting. He was utilized as a rusher, not as a receiver, but I mean, he got carries inside the 10-yard line. He had a couple carries where he was brought down maybe at the 2 or 3. So, you know, he could have had a couple of touchdowns. But and you look at Kansas City's run defense, Devontae Booker comes in and puts up 17.5 fantasy points against them without scoring a touchdown. And
right.
I mean,
it's against Kansas City. It's a huge game, of course, for in real life. But for fan and fantasy-wise, the Chiefs defense, everyone runs on the Chiefs defense.
And the talent of A.J. Dillon, I mean, it's there. He's a more talented rusher than Devontae Booker is. I think we can say that with some certainty. So I think A.J. Dillon, if he gets 15 to 18 carries, he'll probably put up 100 yards and a touchdown.
I think if he's getting that many carries, if he gets the same volume of carries he got last week, that's a starting level player. The
Absolutely.
Question is, will he get that number of carries? And it's hard to say just because we really have no way to predict what this offense is going to look like now that Jordan Love comes in and Matt LaFleur is finally faced with the challenge of not having just someone that's just understanding the whole chessboard. He's really going to have to hold his hand through the game so much more than he ever has for Rodgers.
Yeah, with Kansas City, the expectation, I think, is they're going to sell out for the run. with two talented rushers like Jones and Dillon.
Yeah, make Love beat them.
Yeah, make Jordan Love have to try to beat him over the top. And, I mean, I don't think that they're going to, personally. I think A.J. Dillon, he's a talented enough rusher that even if, you know, Kansas City may be stacking the box with Aaron Jones there, there's enough dichotomy between the two runners that Dillon should get some solid looks. And he'll put up – I mean, he's not going to be an RB1, RB2. He might be a solid flex option.
For sure, and I think looking at the other side of that matchup, Kansas City, this is a huge game. I mean, listen, Kansas City right now, they're a team that they need this victory. And, of course, you never want anyone to get COVID, et cetera. But that Rodgers news is a huge break for Kansas City in a game they just desperately need to win. And in terms of Kansas City fantasy outlooks, I think this is the week Travis Kelce is going to finally break back out of what's been a slump. I mean, in relative terms for Kelce. For Kelce, 2 weeks straight with 13.5 weeks against Tennessee in week 7 and then the dismal 4.7 against the Giants in week 8. I think this is the week for him that he's going to come back, and here's why. Green Bay has been allowing 13 points on average to tight ends this season. Those are not against Travis Kelce-type players. This is a team that has a patchwork group of linebackers, and I think that this is the week where Kelce's finally going to break out because they're going to prioritize, you know, locking up a guy like Tyreek Hill just because that's where the strengths of their defense align. And I think this is finally the week where we're going to see a 20-plus point performance for Kelce.
Yeah, I mean, you have Kelce. It's not like you're benching him.
Right, anyway. Of course.
So I think, you know, it's not really a question if you have him. I mean, in this matchup where Kansas City is desperate to win, they only narrowly beat the Giants, this Green Bay team. You know, you could say it's a ride or die with Aaron Rodgers, but it's still a must win game for them. So I think, you know, don't worry. I mean, I said this a lot in the last episode. Just don't worry about the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, they're going to be fine, I think, in this matchup. And Kelce and Mahomes, they have enough of a track record for you to just roll with them.
I also think we keep saying this with the Chiefs. I think they're going to be 5-11, and Mahomes is going to throw his 30th interception of the season, and we're still going to be like, hey, they're a threat in round one of the playoffs. Like, I mean, at some point, we can't keep saying this is going to be the week. And I'm guilty of it just as much as anyone else, just talking about Kelce. And they narrowly beat the Giants in that game last week. They're going to have to actually show at some point that they're a legitimate threat on offense instead of more this hypothetical. Because now you're at week, you know, this is week 9 of the season. We're more than halfway done. You know, at some point you are who you are as a team, regardless of past seasons. And I think this is going to be a litmus test with a Green Bay team that doesn't have Rodgers. This is a home game for them. It's going to be Arrowhead's going to be booming. This is a real litmus test for what this team can be, both from a fantasy and real life perspective. I think this is a huge game. They have to win it.
Absolutely, yeah. And you talked about with Kelce the Packers against tight ends, and they faced a couple of good tight ends, Hockenson and Kittle being the top two, and Hockenson and Kittle led their teams in receiving when they played against them. But then, you know, against the Steelers, Freiermuth, Bengals, Uzoma had a good game against them. And then, I mean, they're not facing these astounding tight ends like Travis Kelce is. And so Kelce, this Packers defense, I don't think is going to be a threat to him.
I think this is a great week for Kelce. So now shifting gears to another game that I want to hit on that I think is really interesting to me is San Francisco and Arizona. This is a 425 game, an NFC West matchup. And the first thing that I think we have to get to off the top is the status of Kyler Murray this week. We're taping this on Thursday afternoon, and the information we have right now is that Kyler Murray missed yet another day of practice this week, and it's starting to get a little concerning, his ankle. And unless he's really able to get rolling up here on either tomorrow being Friday or Saturday, it's not looking likely that he's going to play in this game. And Colt McCoy keeps taking the first team reps in practice, and it's looking like he might be suiting up here in week 9.
Yeah, Kyler missed back-to-back practices. I'm reading here from an update a couple hours ago that he is expected to play. It's expected for him to take a cautious approach with him. So, you know, we see this sometimes with star players. You know, they suffer some kind of minor injury. They get held out of practice. They come in on game day and they're just fine for fantasy and for NFL purposes. But I think the expectation for Murray is that he's going to play in this matchup against San Francisco. So, you know, if you have him, maybe just pick up a quarterback, like a Taysom Hill or something. I don't know if he would still be available, but there are a couple of fine streaming options. The bye weeks, you know, Geno Smith's on bye. He's probably not someone that was rostered in your league. Taylor Heineke, probably not someone who was rostered. So there's probably enough waiver wire quarterbacks.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, let's say Kyler does play this week, someone that I'm looking at. So first of all, AJ Green right now has COVID. We don't know for sure, but it looks like he's vaccinated, given that he hasn't been immediately ruled out, which is, you know, it's speculation, but that's generally an indication that he is vaccinated. But he might not play this week. And he's been, I mean, he's had a really good season. He had another double-digit performance last week. So naturally, first of all, Zach Ertz getting in the mix this week. I'm not sure, again, that in the week one you really want to start Zach Ertz here as he comes in here for the Cardinals out of the bullpen. But that being said, there's definitely a level of intrigue where it's like, well, I don't know. You know, he had in his first game for playing for Arizona, he has four receptions for 42 yards. So it's definitely something that's intriguing to me. Do you feel comfortable playing Zach Ertz this week?
Yeah, the way the tight end position is, if you have Zach Ertz, you're playing him. If he's your starting tight end, you're starting him as your starting tight end. I mean, 8 points from the tight end position, it's not great, but it's something. He's a body that you can put in there. Maybe waiver wire options. I mean, I'm interested in Pat Freiermuth potentially being...
Zach Ertz is a fringe starter, I would say, for a matchup like this. This is not a guy that is a, you know, set it and just let it go kind of guy, whoever the matchup is. This is still matchup dependent. And for a team like San Francisco that prides itself on its linebacker play with Fred Warner, who's one of the best linebackers in the league, that's definitely something. And this is why they got him, because they didn't really have that middle of the field presence. And especially with AJ Green out this week, I think Ertz could be in for a little bit more work. So that's a guy who I would personally start, especially if you're a tight end needy team. The other guy being Christian Kirk, who had some really, really consistent production in terms of both his targets. He had that one dud against the Rams in week four, but aside from that, he's been really consistent this season. And in his last four matchups, he's had five targets being his floor, and he's put together in his four receptions over each of his last four games. So I think that's a guy who I feel comfortable starting. I mean, you look over his last few games, he just had a really, really solid season. He's wide receiver 27 right now, and especially with AJ Green out, against this beaten up San Francisco secondary, that's a guy that I would look to start this week in a flex role.
Yeah, especially, like you said, in the flex role, he's not going to be a wide receiver one or two. Obviously not wide receiver one, maybe wide receiver three to flex option. But, you know, in the games where he gets a touchdown, he's upwards of 15 to 20 points. If not, he's usually at a floor of around 8 to 10 points. Which is great from your flex option. You want to see double digits out of that position.
Yeah.
And, I mean, with Kyler, I would be fine starting Kirk. Without Kyler,
no, exactly. And that is the very key point of this, is that if you have Kyler on your team, and then this is one of those quarterback dependent. When I was making that point about how you're still starting Adams, you're still starting Jones, etc., that's a very different looking thing when you're dealing with the Cardinals. And Hopkins, I would still probably start him.
It's not an
Adams thing where that's a given. I mean, again, this is kind of semantics because it's looking like he's going to play. You look at the opposing side of that matchup, though, and this is a game the Cardinals suffering their first loss of the season last week. They go back now. They bounce back from Thursday Night Football. They have the extended time off, and they get San Francisco. And when you look on the San Francisco side of things, the first guy that pops out is Deebo Samuel has just been amazing lately. I mean, he came into the season, obviously being their go-to guy, really one of the few pillars of the Shanahan era when he's had full control over the roster, who's really been one of his finds. And that Deebo Samuel's been amazing. 6 receptions, 171 yards. Just another unbelievable thing. And he's just getting targeted an extreme amount. His minimum amount of targets he's gotten this season is 8. He's gotten upwards from anywhere from 8 to 13 targets in every single game this season. So with that level of volume he's seeing, no matter whether it's been Lance or Jimmy G as the starting quarterback, he's continuing to produce, and there's no reason to think that right now he's wide receiver 4, that level of production won't just maintain itself again this week against a really good Arizona defense.
Yeah, with Deebo, I mean, he has 6 catches, puts up 171 yards. His one dud game this season came with Trey Lance as quarterback, and it's not even a dud game for fantasy purposes because he has that rushing touchdown.
Correct, yeah.
But, I mean, with Lance, he still had 9 targets, only corralled 3 of them. But there really is... I don't think Garoppolo is going to lose the job just yet. I mean, they have a rough stretch of Arizona and then LA, so they're, I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're going to lose those two games.
Yeah.
But I think Garoppolo will probably keep his job. Trey Lance is the quarterback of the future, obviously. But, you know, if you have Debo, he is the number four wide receiver. You might want to maybe try to trade him just because of the threat of Trey Lance. But I think, you know, if you
have him, I think you hold on. Debo's a guy who, listen, if you got Debo in your draft definitely later than he should have gone, you're set right now. And I think that you've been carried there. And this is a team that I'm – feel really confident, and I think this is going to be a good game. I mean, 49ers, of course, are 3-4, but the bigger fantasy storyline from their perspective is the return of George Kittle this week. He's missed a few weeks, obviously. You know, it's been a long time since he's been there for this team. And finally, it looks like he's getting off injured reserve with that calf injury, and he's actually going to make his return for the first time since week four, when he wasn't exactly lighting up everything. I mean, he didn't score a touchdown in any of the four games he's played this season, and three of those four games, he only had four receptions. So it's not like he was, you know, going out there and lighting up the league earlier in the season. But I do think, as he comes back, that adds a different dimension to their offense. And if you drafted Kittle high, you had him stuck on your IR for a lot of time, you're putting him back in the starting lineup.
Yeah, we haven't seen any updates on if he is actually going to play. I'm seeing 21 hours ago that he's designated and that the real test is going to happen today on Thursday, and yeah. I haven't seen an update
from
that.
No, I just checked Twitter. There's been no reports about that lately.
Shanahan says the real test before that, they're not counting on 100% for him to suit up, but if he does, he's a tight end. He's back in your lineup for sure. If he doesn't, you know, there's other – you've been rolling without Kittle in your lineup for the past few weeks, so you have another tight end option. So just roll with that one. But, you know, with Kittle, I think other options on San Francisco, like Elijah Mitchell, I think he's going to be fine. He has two consecutive weeks with over 100 yards and a touchdown. Unfortunately, no receptions to speak of, which is one unfortunate thing about his game, with Jamichael Hasty really working in as that scat back type option.
Yeah, pretty much. But that's typical for their offense. That's pretty much how it's always been. Whoever, there's always a plug-and-play receiving back in that offense.
And something I'm trying to do with Mitchell, I'm trying to trade him. He's put up...
Really?
Yeah, I in PPR, I don't like the lack of targets, the lack of receptions, and any other kind of PPR bonus. And Jeff Wilson will come back eventually. And, you know, I think with Mitchell, his... Maybe try to get – I don't know exactly.
It's just he's had 18 carries and a rushing touchdown each of the two games coming off the bye. But I do think that when you're putting zero receptions together multiple games in a row – I mean, this is a guy who had six games this season, has four total receptions. So when you're averaging that low a receiving, when you're averaging literally, you know – less than one reception per game as a running back in a PPR format, that is something that's concerning, because you all of a sudden become really dependent. And if you have a dud game rushing the ball, you don't get the work on the goal line, all of a sudden that turns into a really low week. It just kind of lowers the floor of a player like that. So I do think that that's a reasonable thing. And listen, he's been really, really good in the games he's played, but he obviously hasn't played all the games so far. And you're correct. Both his floor really is lowered by that. So that's something that I think is interesting, definitely, to see. Now, switching gears a little bit, there's a few more really interesting fantasy games. And I think the most intriguing one to me is Titans-Rams, which is Sunday Night Football. Now, we talked ad nauseum on the last episode we did about how the Titans would look offensively without Derrick Henry. But this is going to be the first real test of that we're going to see. And on the Rams side, they're just been a juggernaut. They're 7-1. We're not breaking any news with that. But Cooper Kupp continues his production. And Robert Woods, I feel like he's primed for a different kind of week, potentially, just because he's been seeing the volume that would indicate a better production level from a fantasy perspective than he's actually had. So he's someone that I look to kind of go out and kind of acquire, just because I think he's been getting a huge amount of target share. And when you actually dig into it, right, you know, he had that one week where he had 14 targets, but he's been happy in his last five games. He's had double digits in all these games. He had 20 points again last week, and that's, of course, aided as well by two touchdowns.
Yeah,
but I just think one rushing touchdown. I just think Woods is the guy that I kind of want to go acquire for the second half of the season, because Kupp's been amazing, obviously. Stafford's been looking for Kupp, but this offense is just so good. You want a piece of it. And I think Woods is a great way to get in a piece of it at kind of a cheaper cost.
Yeah, with Robert Woods, it comes down to if you're willing to maybe stomach a bad week or two in there. You know, maybe the rushing touchdown on the goal line isn't going to come.
With the targets he's getting, I don't really think that that's that huge of an issue, at least in my opinion. He's getting enough targets to the point where he's not having weeks where he's going targeted once or twice. I don't see that as being as big of an issue for a guy like Woods. I think that he's a consistent guy. He's been there forever, of course. I don't know. I just think, listen, he's not going to be the best player, but he's not going to suddenly outdo a Cup or the number one option on his team. But that's just a classic solid flex option to me. And in this Titans matchup, I really like that option to be the number two wide receiver. Cup's going to get the attention. And I think Woods can be primed for a big week.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's that 14-point week, or 14-target week, I should say, where he had 150 yards. And then after that, you know, in the lower yardage games, he's still managing to score a touchdown, which helps his fantasy floor. He has one game under double-digit points, like you were saying. So I think, you know, out of your wide receiver, he's the wide receiver 18 on the year. So out of your wide receiver 2-3 position, he'll give you double-digit points. And in this game, like you said, he's primed to have a good week.
And on the other side of the ball for Tennessee, Julio Jones is not a guy that I would start. He's probably going to be back this week after missing the Indianapolis game with an injury. But his production's just been really, really limited. I mean, he had 3 receptions against Buffalo. He had 2 receptions the ensuing week 7 against Kansas City. It just hasn't been a great season for Julio. I wouldn't say he's on the other side of the hill. He still makes some plays. We're like, oh, that's Julio. But that being said, he's clearly second or third in that offense behind A.J. Brown. And just from the receiving perspective, I think the more interesting guy in terms of someone that is on the fringe of whether or not you want to start him is Ryan Tannehill, though. Ryan Tannehill last week puts up 21 fantasy points. He had another good week, pretty efficient. And he's been pretty efficient all season long. You know, his best week was probably that, from a real football perspective, was probably that week against Kansas City. I mean, that was the week where they just came in and obliterated the Chiefs. And by the fourth quarter, we're just dumping the ball off. But he was really efficient, and he's been a good player this season. Of course, last season, the expectations were high after he was one of the best fantasy quarterbacks last season. But I do wonder, against a really good Rams defense, if this is a guy that you'd feel comfortable starting right now, just because he hasn't had any weeks. I mean, he literally has not had a week above 21 points.
Yeah, it's a tough matchup.
It is a tough matchup.
With Tannehill, do we think he's going to be the same player without Derrick Henry? Do we think he can lead an offense?
Well, I think that's the interesting question, right?
Like, he has his rushing yards, his rushing production. It's because of Derrick Henry. Like, when you do play action and run
and
the ball,
and this is sort of what we talked about last week, and I think this is what is the interesting point with him. How much of what he does was aided by Derrick Henry, such that without him there, all of a sudden, you're not going to see the pockets be the same when you're not running the play action as effectively. He can't run those bootlegs that they're such a huge part of anyone that's in the Shanahan family of offenses, which the Titans are a part of, that those plays are just so essential to what they do as an offense. But at the same time, they're going to have to increase the volume of passes. If McNichols is one of their top players, well, his specialty is as a receiving back. So all of a sudden, when he's in the game more, they're going to try to do more dump passes, more checkdowns. What's Tannehill's role going to look like? And that's not an answer that I have sitting here right now. But I think what we see, I wouldn't start Tannehill this week, but I would pay really close attention to, you know what, maybe they're just going to go out and sling the ball around the field and just be like, you know what, we're going all in on the passing thing. Because this is a big game for them. You know, he's had not a huge amount of attempts. In his last 4 games, he's had, you know, 33 attempts in one game, but that's been his max in the last few games. So he hasn't been asked that much of this season. And they've been a great team. They're dominating their division, so they haven't really needed anything out of that more than what he's given. But now they're asking a huge amount more of him. And how he responds to that, as a guy who's obviously resurrected his career in Tennessee and has been a product of a really great offense where he can just manage it enough, how is he going to respond to this? It's really interesting.
I think he's probably going to push 40 to 45 pass attempts in this game.
And if you're getting 40 pass attempts out of him, then I think he's a starting level player. But they haven't shown.
You just got to wait and see here.
I think
especially against the Rams, just wait and see how this offense looks, what kind of offensive identity they try to cultivate without Derrick Henry. It's not going to be based on running Adrian Peterson 30 times a game. They just can't do that. And it's not going to be based on the play action with defenses selling out to stop him, like we talked about last episode. So we have to see what kind of offensive identity Mike Vrabel tries to install without Derrick Henry, be it, you know, trying to get it more vertical, trying to maybe, you know, hit target. I think Julio, you might want to wait and see on him too, but if you have to start him, I wouldn't hate it. I mean, AJ Brown's
going to No, I don't. I would hate it. Don't start.
All right. I think he might be okay.
Single digits his last two times he's been on the field. I'm just, again, I think this is the same thing as the Tannehill. We don't know. No one knows what their offense is really going to change without a guy who, and any other running back in the, there's no other running back in the sport where this wouldn't be, all right, next man up, just move the chains along, because that's how the value works in the running back position. But Derrick Henry was just being used at a different rate and just as a different type of player than really anyone else was in the league, which is why it makes it so challenging to evaluate what can happen. So I think we see him sit and wait on that. And I would again say, you know, obviously you're starting A.J. Brown this week. But for anyone else, maybe you're starting McNichols, maybe you're starting Peterson if you're really desperate for running backs. But I think that team as a whole, that's wait and see. And I think the Rams are probably going to coast that game. I mean, Sunday Night Football, it's a big game, but the loss of Henry is just so hard to overcome.
Yeah, with the Rams, I mean, you're starting Daryl Henderson no matter what. He's the number 11 running back in PPR, number 7 in standard. He had that one not great game against Detroit, but comes in against Houston, scores 2 touchdowns.
He's running the ship.
Yeah, and with the Rams offense, you're starting, like you said, Kupp, Woods, Stafford, Henderson. I mean, Higbee, if you need to, he's been okay. I mean, as a tight end option, he's putting up, you know, less than double digit points for the past month and a half, which isn't great. But, you know, as a tight end, sometimes you just got to deal with that.
Yeah, so that's going to be a really interesting game just to see what the Titans are going to look like. And another game that I'm really interested in, not because I don't think we have question marks, but another guy who I have questions about is Rashad Bateman, and that brings us to the Ravens offense. The Ravens have been a great team, of course. Lamar Jackson's put together this stellar fantasy season so far, and they've just been they've been such a fun team to watch. Rashad Bateman was added to the offense for 2 weeks before the bye, and in those two games, he had 4 receptions for 29 yards in his NFL debut, then 3 receptions for 80 yards in that, and he had that one booming play in his second game. Now they have the bye. They have time to kind of instill him more into the offense, and now where does Bateman go? I have Bateman on one of my teams, full disclosure, and I'm really struggling with, do you start this guy? He's only rostered right now in 23.4. First of all, he's rostered in 23.4% of ESPN leagues. If you're in a league that is not rostered, then pause the podcast, go pick him up. This is a guy that they're going to be relying on more heavily on the back half of the bye. But that being said, he should be rostered in every league, probably 10 teams and above. He really should be rostered. But aside from that, he's had, you know, 12 targets in his first two games. This is a guy who, do you start him against Minnesota because he's going to be opposite Hollywood Brown in this game? He still doesn't have a huge amount of film on him. It's not a clear-cut decision, but maybe? I don't know. What do you think?
I think in leagues where, you know, a lot of good wide receivers are out, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett out, they're on bye. Metcalf, McLaurin, the Bucks guys. So I would start him. Marquise Brown had 14 targets last week. I think
there's definitely a chance that
a reasonable assumption is that some of those targets go to Rashad Bateman and they don't try to pepper Brown with targets. And I think Bateman and Brown, they're gonna be a solid receiving tandem.
There's a world where Bateman's going to have 2 receptions for 14 yards and you're gonna call us idiots, which we probably already are. But I think for Bateman, there's also a good chance that he's going to come into this game and they're going to look for him more just to incorporate him into the offense. You spend first-round draft capital on this guy who produced so well at Minnesota in college. And I'm a Bateman believer in real-life football. I'm a Bateman believer for the back half. If you're in any dynasty leagues, I'm a Bateman believer. I think this is just a great guy, but everyone else, obviously Mark Andrews, he's the number 2 tight end in fantasy right now. He's very close to overtaking Kelsey for number 1. He's a guy you want to pounce on. Hollywood Brown, we have this conversation that Hollywood Brown's been way better than you think Hollywood Brown is playing this season. And that should continue. And their schedule, you know, it's an interesting schedule, right, because they still have a huge amount of the AFC North to go through, especially as the weather gets colder. But after this game against Minnesota, they get a nice week at Miami and then Chicago. So their schedule does loosen up a little bit here after having to go through the Chargers and the Bengals over the last couple weeks. So the Ravens are an interesting team to me just because we have so many constants in their offense and guys that we've seen for so many years play together, Lamar, Andrews, Brown, and then you add in this element of Bateman that we just – it's just unknown.
Yeah, I think Bateman's going to be great in this offense, and I think you can start him in your flex if you have to put him in, slide him in front of your wide receivers on bye. I would not be sad to do that. And I think it's going to be a good game on the other side of the ball with Minnesota. You know, you're starting your Dalvin Cook, yeah. Adam Thielen. You still have to start Justin Jefferson. He comes off of only a 4-target performance, but against the Cowboys, that was just a weird game. He only puts up 4.1 points. I don't know how Minnesota lost this game.
It doesn't. Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, he did have to go against Trevon Diggs, who's the runaway rookie defensive, who could be one of the he could win defensive player of the year. But that being said, I do think in this week it was a bizarre performance. The entire team had a bizarre performance. That's a game. There's just no excuse for them to have lost that game to Dallas. And how they respond this week at Baltimore on the road is really interesting. I think Baltimore is the better team. But let's see how they can respond, because Jefferson, I mean, he has to play better. And by the way, that was his first real down game of the season. He had only 4 targets. Before that, the lowest amount of targets he'd had in the game was 7. So a lot of these guys, when we're going through their game logs, talking about their context of the season, we're like, oh, they've had this kind of great season except that 1 week. I think that's the same for Jefferson. It just so happens that 1 week where they were down happens to be the last one that we're looking at, which is why we kind of view the context a bit differently. But I don't have any real red flags about Jefferson other than that he was kind of draped by Diggs. It was an off week, and he's back at it against Baltimore. They do have kind of a difficult schedule coming up for the next couple weeks. They go to Baltimore, then they have to go to LA to face the Chargers, then they face Green Bay, San Francisco. So the schedule does toughen up a little bit compared to when they were playing Detroit and Carolina and kind of easier teams like that earlier in the season.
Yeah, with Jefferson, he's the number 21 wide receiver in PPR right now, which is surprising.
It's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, and Thielen is number 15. Thielen obviously is getting those touchdowns. He has 6 on the season, if I'm doing math.
And you wonder if that's sustainable too.
I think Jefferson is going to. I think he's a better wide receiver at this point.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And I think, you know, if the Justin Jefferson manager is spooked because of, you know, the 4-point game against Dallas.
And by the way, if you're a Justin Jefferson manager, don't be spooked. But if you know
who the Jefferson manager is. But if you're in my league and you're the Justin Jefferson manager, I would happily take him off your hands. And I think you're still starting Thielen. He had 9 targets and 78 yards and a touchdown. He had a couple of dud weeks where he didn't score, and that's going to happen with Thielen.
He's a wide receiver. Like, he doesn't
put up a touchdown. But I think against Baltimore, where, you know, he's probably valued by the defense as the second option, so he'll get softer coverage. So he'll probably keep doing what he's doing. And I think for Dalvin Cook, he was criminally underutilized. He has been this entire season.
But I think that's also an injury thing. I think they're trying to really help him. I mean, he had that one injury scare a few weeks ago, and I think especially since then, but really all season, his carrying numbers. I mean, he did have 29 carries against Carolina. It's not like that's been true all season. I think it's actually been the receiving production that's been disappointing. He had zero receptions last week against Dallas, and that's something that is a little bit concerning because the same way we were talking about before with Elijah Mitchell, if you're a running back that's getting 18 carries, that's great. If you get 0 targets, all of a sudden your floor becomes a lot lower, right? 18 carries, that sounds great on paper. Well, he's 78.
It could be 18 for 40 yards.
Well, he has 18 carries for 78 yards. You're like, oh, that's really good production. He's getting a ton of touches, blah, 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 whatever. Well, when you have no rushing touchdowns and you have no receptions, that's a 7.8-point game, and that's a single-digit game for a guy that's supposed to be one of the premier players in fantasy football, and all of a sudden now you're really disappointed in him. So he does need to get that work and more goal line work. I mean, this is a guy that has 2 rushing touchdowns this season. Two total touchdowns. Well, he hasn't been getting receptions, so he's not going to have receiving touchdowns. Dalvin Cook, this is, what is this, right now, week 9? I'm pretty sure he should not have 2 rushing touchdowns. Yeah, he's missed games with injuries,
but
still.
What I don't understand about Dalvin Cook is that when Alexander Mattison gets his spot starts, he had 6 catches for 59 yards and 7 catches for 40 yards and a touchdown. Why is that receiving production not translating to Dalvin Cook when Dalvin Cook's on the field? It does not make any sense to me.
That's a really good point. The two games that Dalvin Cook missed were the games against Seattle and the game against Detroit. In those two games, Alexander Mattison had 6 and 7 receptions. Why is that? And by the way, Alexander Mattison, it's not like he's just, you know, this is not a guy who's this is not a situation where, like the Niners, where the lead back is just not in on passing downs. It's not like Alexander Mattison in the games, right? Dalvin Cook has zero receptions against Dallas. Well, Alexander Mattison had two receptions, and it's not like, and those were for -5 yards combined.
But he's still getting the catches, you know?
Ish. But he's getting more catches than Cook, but he's not really getting a huge amount of production. So in total, this is just not a team that's really featuring that as a part of their offense. And I think as a Dalvin Cook fan,
they're losing. They're losing games.
Yes.
And Dalvin Cook should be doing much better. Alexander Mattison, like you said, in those two starts, 23 fantasy points and 25 fantasy points. Dalvin Cook has his highest fantasy output of 21 fantasy points. So I don't understand why Mattison is getting more production and is getting, you know, more carries and touches. He had over 32 touches in both games. Cook has gotten 31 touches and has gotten, you know, 26 touches as his top one. So it makes no sense the way they're utilizing Dalvin Cook. I just don't understand. And they're losing games because of it.
Well, right. And I mean, hasn't been insanely productive. He has not been as good as he's been in years past.
But he's the number 30 back right now.
Right, from fantasy. But in real life, I mean, he's been a good player, but he's not been... He also hasn't broken some huge plays in a lot of these games that you would expect typically he relies on. In the Vikings offense, though, you know, aside from the running back position, I think a real big storyline that I'm certainly watching this week is Tyler Conklin. Conklin is rostered right now at 38% of leagues, and that was a 24-point increase. So coming into last week, he was rostered in 14% of ESPN leagues. Now that almost tripled with the performance of 1 week, and that's a 10-point performance. But he had 5 receptions for 57 yards on 7 targets, and this is a guy who was in pretty solid pretty consistent targets. And in this offense against Baltimore, when we mentioned they have Thielen and Jefferson on the outside, there's some room for a tight end to kind of slip in there. And Conklin's been that guy who fits in that category of Zach Ertz type players, where this is a guy that's going to go out there and he's going to get you somewhere between maybe 6 and 12 points. And as a tight end, that's not winning you any games, that's for sure. He had done his high this season. He did have a 20-point performance when he had 7 receptions for 70 yards and a touchdown. That's not going to happen every week either. But that being said, Zach Ertz is a guy, the same way that Tyler Conklin's a guy, where these are guys that if you're really tight end needy, looking for the fringes of tight end ones, he's a guy that could come in there and have a solid role, and you can feel good about getting a few receptions.
Yeah, with Conklin, I think, you know, he's a spot starter, 15 tight end in PPR, but the last 2 weeks he's put up over 10 points.
Yeah, listen, he's not lighting up the world, but...
But he's a tight end.
He's doing enough.
You can put him in your tight end position. He'll get probably, I mean, he had 7 targets in this game. He'll probably be around 5 to 6 targets in the game against Baltimore. I mean, it should be a reasonably competitive game if Baltimore doesn't blow them out, which, you know, is always a possibility, given that they lost to Cooper Rush last week.
Yeah.
I think you can fire up Conklin as a solid starter.
Yeah, so another storyline as we move on to the next game that we forgot to hit on earlier is Michael Thomas and the New Orleans Saints. Michael Thomas, it's announced this week, is going to be out for the remainder of the season, as he has been all season. Listen, you probably didn't spend that much to acquire Michael Thomas. He was, on average, going in the 9th round of ESPN fantasy drafts. So this wasn't a guy who people drafted or counting on, per se, but it now becomes official. You're not going to be receiving any Michael Thomas production. And I think that brings us to an interesting point of where does New Orleans possibly go from here? Because this is sort of where they've been. Now you have Jameis is gone. Now Michael Thomas is out officially. And this was a team that just a couple weeks ago, you were saying, you know, this momentum is really positive for this team. Like, this could be a contender. I mean, Sean Payton having one of his best coaching jobs with a roster that shouldn't really be this good. And now they're just decimated by injuries. The Jameis thing is obviously just, we don't really know yet for sure what the deal is going to be with whether they use Taysom more, whether they go back to their third-string quarterback. It's, you know, definitely still up in the air for sure what they're going to look like now in this new iteration. And the Thomas news just kind of adds to that level of grimness with New Orleans.
I think Taysom Hill is the starter. He's practiced in full on Thursday after the concussion has held him out for a while now. He's been held out for, you know, three or a month.
But I still think we're going to see some Simeon.
I don't think so. I think if they put Taysom in as a starter, I think he's going to be there on every down. When he started for a month last year, they didn't have Simeon, but Simeon's not a world beater. He's not going to light the world on fire. But I think with Taysom, I mean, he had 2 separate games where he ran for 2 touchdowns. I think he's a solid fantasy quarterback. I think 23 points, 20 points, 17 points, 19 points. He's not going to be a quarterback one, but I think
Taysom?
He'll probably be in the top 10. I mean,
top 12. You know what? I've fallen into this trap before, the Taysom trap. We kind of saw this last year when Breeze was missing games. It's really, really, really easy to talk yourself into Taysom. Well, he's this guy, and he's kind of he's this mobile guy, and they're going to use him in all types of ways. And he's also going to get these quarterback stats, and isn't this going to be great? You know, on paper, with Taysom, and this is generally true with Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill on paper is a lot better than actually Taysom Hill at quarterback. It's kind of the thing when, like, remember last year, this occurred to me with the Packers COVID issues. It's like, remember that thing last year when the Broncos had all four quarterbacks out and they had to go to a wide receiver quarterback? And you were like, oh, this sounds great. He's going to be mobile. Look at all these fun things they can try. The concept of having no quarterback was actually a lot more fun than the actually having no quarterback. The concept of Taysom Hill being here and being versatile and he can do all these things is actually a lot better than Taysom Hill, the quarterback. There's a reason why he's been in the league for this long and never elevated to quarterback. So I'm interested to see what he can cook up, but I'm not starting him in fantasy. I mean, maybe roster him at the end of your bench if you really want him that bad. But right now he's rostered in 9% of ESPN leagues, and I think that's about right. There's just no need to get Taysom Hill right now. I'm not personally a believer in where the Saints offense. Maybe the Saints offense is great because of what Kamara can do, but for Taysom right now, it's a very meh for me.
Yeah, Taysom did lead on Michael Thomas last year in his four starts, but he wasn't bad for fantasy. Like I said, he put up an average of 20 points, and from the quarterback position, that's fine. It's serviceable. But without Michael Thomas, we haven't seen
him. I just don't think if he's playing the rest of the season, I don't – like, what do you get? I just don't know. I would not be a Taysom guy. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't know. We'll see. And then there are wide receivers that are going to be – definitely impacted by this is Marquez Callaway. Kind of had a couple weeks there where you're like, oh, like this guy, when he puts up 24 against Washington in week 5, and then back down to earth for him with he's had 3 receptions for around 30 yards in each of the last 2 games against Seattle and Tampa. And right now he's the guy that should probably be rostered somewhere, hanging around somewhere on your bench. But he's had a lot of flashes, but he's not a starting level player, at least not to me.
No, yeah, especially with Taysom coming in or Simeon even coming in. He's put up 3 for 30 in the past 2 weeks. He might be a flex option, potentially, but I think there's better guys out there.
Yeah, but by the way, I mean, this New Orleans team, they're in flux, whatever. I still think they probably can beat Atlanta this week, because Atlanta's not really that good of a team themselves. We kind of had a big Atlanta conversation on last week's episode, but just in short, Mike Davis is a guy who you really can start at flex this week. It sounds lame. You're definitely not excited about it, but you can start Mike
You'll
Davis.
You'll probably get 10 points from him.
He probably will, because that's been how it's gone for him, and Kyle Pitts is a guy you're obviously starting, and you're hoping to see more out of him, because now then he had that really, really down week of 3.3 points. You do wonder, this is a guy who has played 7 games so far this season, and he's had in 4 of those 7 games, he's put up single digits. So there is still an element of Kyle Pitts where it's like, can you prove that this is can be consistent? And I need to see him put up together something else, because if he puts together another single digit game, and then that becomes 5 out of his 8 games this season have been single digits, it starts to get a little concerning for Pitts, even as good as he's seemingly been as a rookie.
Yeah, he's a tight end, though, so you got to put him in your lineup.
He's in your lineup for sure, but just in terms of when we're evaluating different kinds of value for players, Pitts is a guy who is definitely he still has stuff to prove. And again, he's a rookie. Not in real life, he doesn't have anything to prove. He's a machine. In fantasy, there's definitely a difference.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, all right, I just want to hit one more game here before we get out, and that's Raiders-Giants. The Raiders right now are in flux. Henry Ruggs is something just hit on quickly. We don't need to really get into the specifics. There's plenty of places you can go that are a lot more qualified than us. Talk about Ruggs, of course. He's released from the team. Just a tragic situation there. But where this team goes from here on a fantasy perspective after the departure of Ruggs is something that's really interesting to me. Hunter Renfrow is a guy that I have that I'm starting this week. And I got to say, at the beginning, I was like, oh, Renfrow, generic, that's kind of lame. And you think of him as being some kind of lame guy. But when you actually go dig into the stats for Hunter Renfrow this year, he's been a really good fantasy player. And in the games he's played, this is a guy who's played 7 games. In 6 of the 7 games, he's put up double digits. That's a consistent PPR weapon to be put in the flex position, and that's not going to cost your team and just going to move it along.
Absolutely, yeah, with Hunter Renfrow, especially now without Henry Ruggs taking up a couple of targets. His target volume is going to be completely static. It's not going to change because he's not going to be impacted by
and if
the
he's getting guys. 7-8 targets a game, that's more than enough for him because he's going because most of those are on plays when he's pretty open. Like in general, that's Derek Carr is not a guy who's, you know, putting balls in super tight windows to begin with. He's just Carr's been solid all season, but you know, this is a great third down option for Derek Carr and someone that is just really reliable. And I think certainly a wide receiver, fringe wide receiver two, probably wide receiver three, but a wide receiver three that you feel comfortable starting.
Yeah, he's going to get you 10 plus points no matter what. And if he gets a touchdown, then there's like 16 to 18 points.
Right, exactly. And I mean, listen, he hasn't had many touchdown opportunities. That's not really his style. And then on the other side, for this week, Saquon Barkley. So he has not played since injuring his ankle in week 5, but the Giants are hopeful he's going to return this week. And this is a defense he's playing in Las Vegas, I almost said Oakland, that is allowing the 9th most points per game to fantasy running backs. So Saquon's a guy, I mean, listen, I don't know, he had 2 weeks, but so the week he got injured, right, that was obviously early in the game, he only had 2 carries. The 2 weeks before that, he had 21 and 29 fantasy points, so it was looking encouraging for Saquon managers before that injury, and I'm really interested to see, it's going to be fun if he can come back this week.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. He did test positive for COVID-19,
so he is trending
toward absence on Sunday, according to Joe Judge. He says, I wouldn't eliminate it, but it's not moving in a direction to give us a definite answer in a positive way, which is a very long-winded way of saying he's probably not going to play, which makes sense because they're going to their bye in week 10, and so it would be smart for the Giants to, even if he didn't have COVID, to rest that ankle going to the bye, and then he'll come back in week 11. But he's got a tough draw in week 11 against Tampa, but you know if he's in, you're playing him, he's Saquon Barkley. But I don't think he's going to play this week. And on the other side of the ball with Josh Jacobs, it's interesting. He's the number 27 running back. He's missed 2 games and hasn't rushed for more than 100 yards this season. But he's getting targets and he's getting catches, which is interesting with Kenny and Drake also there.
You thought it was going to be the opposite when Drake came in. You were like, oh, all right, that's good. Jacobs will just be the bruising back, and then Drake will come in for receptions. And then Jacobs is having more receptions than he had any time of his career, which has been an interesting dichotomy kind of. And he's a guy, yeah, you're starting Josh Jacobs. When he's there, he's been a really reliable player, double digits in every game he's played in the season. They come off the bye, and I think that's a game they should steamroll. I mean, listen, the Giants won't much fight against the Chiefs. But that being said, this is a game that Las Vegas should win this game. And then they have another matchup. They have a matchup with Kansas City the week after, which I'm looking forward to. So I think there's a lot of good matchups this week. And it's a really good slate of games. I mean, obviously, the Green Bay-Kansas City game looked better with Rodgers, but in all, it's still a really, really fun slate of games that is going on for NFL Week 9, and there's going to be a lot to get to on the other side of it early next week.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be a good week. There's a couple more bye weeks, but not, I mean, Geno Smith and Seahawks, Washington football team, not so many great teams on bye.
No.
So there should be a lot of points, and I'll be excited to see the Ravens offense go to town also.
Yeah, that's going to be a good game. Really, all time Sunday Night Football, we mentioned, is going to be good. There's just fun games going on all day Sunday. So, Colin, thank you very much. This is our first time. We've done 2 episodes in a week. We're hoping to get to that on a weekly basis and, you know, just provide some fantasy information for everyone out there who's in need of finessing their league.
Yeah, that's what we do. We finesse the leagues, and that's just how the season's going to go.
Yep, for sure. So thank you guys, as always, for listening. I'm Maddie Wasserman signing off, and we'll see you next time on the Fantasy Finessers Podcast.